VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Israel's cabinet approves a deal to release some hostages seized by Hamas.
What we have now is a temporary four-day pause in order to facilitate an evacuation of 50 hostages. And then we're offering Hamas a choice. For every 10 additional hostages it releases, we will give another one-day pause in the fighting.
The U.S. says leaders of Rwanda and the DR Congo agreed to de-escalate after a surge in violence. Nigeria hopes for an economic boom following a series of investment deals. Former Nigerian President Obasanjo calls on African countries to adopt what he calls Afro-democracy in place of Western liberal democracy. Liberia's Election Commission chair reflects on the October and November elections.
I think the process was good, despite funding delays, despite the fact that we have challenges on a few with respect to the rough terrain, despite pockets of agitation here and there.
And Kenya's electronic health system transforms access to rural health care. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Israel's cabinet has approved a deal to release some hostages seized by Hamas in exchange for a pause in fighting in Gaza, which could begin as early as today, Thursday. In an exclusive interview Wednesday, Israeli government spokesperson Ilan Levy spoke to viewers Carol Van Dam about a four-day pause in the fighting. He begins by describing Israel's reaction to recent satellite imaging over Gaza, which researchers tell VOA shows that 40 to 51% of buildings in northern Gaza have been damaged or destroyed since the war began.
It is a tragedy that for the last 16 years that the Hamas terror group has controlled the Gaza Strip, it has exploited the Strip and its residents to advance its goal of murdering Jews and destroying the State of Israel. Hamas even built whole hospitals on top of the terror tunnels that it had already built. All that cement over the years that was meant to go to people's houses went into Hamas's terror tunnels underneath the ground. And in this war, in response to the October 7th massacre, that horrific slaughter of 1,200 Israelis on October 7th, we have been targeting Hamas infrastructure. We've been targeting those tunnels and that terrorist infrastructure they built underneath civilian areas in the most inhumane way.
You have concrete evidence of that, that they built.
Absolutely.
First, and then they built the hospitals on top.
Indeed, the Israeli army has released satellite footage showing the construction of the Indonesian hospital, showing a Hamas command areas, and then a few years later, you see the same satellite images showing a building on top of it. The Shifa hospital, we all know now, beyond doubt, was being used as a Hamas command center. Just this evening, the Israeli army has released footage from inside that tunnel network. First, we showed a 10-meter deep shaft leading to a 55-meter long tunnel in the hospital. Yesterday, we showed that we managed to get through the blast door at the end of that tunnel, and now we're in. And we've shown the air-conditioned rooms that Hamas was using and the bathrooms they had in these bunkers underneath the hospital in that terror network. And it is tragic that Hamas has subjugated the people of the Gaza Strip and used the Gaza Strip to advance that goal of terrorism and war against Israel.
What about my question? Does Israel plan to rebuild there?
Israel has three principles for the day after Hamas. First, demilitarization. Second, de-radicalization. We can't have a return of extremism. And third, reconstruction. Of course, we want to see houses being built again in the Gaza Strip, but we have to make sure this time that the concrete that goes in for people's houses actually goes to the houses, and it doesn't go into building a whole underground city of tunnels like it has in recent years. We have to make sure that the water pipes that go into the Gaza Strip get used to transport water instead of getting dug up and sent as rockets back into Israel, because Hamas has actually released videos of them digging up water pipes and sending them back into Israel as rockets.
What can you tell us about the ceasefire, and what are you expecting to happen after the 4 days are over?
There is no ceasefire. The war continues. What we have now is a temporary cessation, a temporary four-day pause in order to facilitate an evacuation of 50 hostages. The arrangement we have now is to get 50 hostages, women and children. There is a baby who is only 10 months old, who has been held hostage by Hamas for nearly 50 days now. There's a three-year-old girl who's been held hostage. She's an orphan because Hamas murdered her parents in front of her. And we're going to try to get those 50 women and children out. And then we're offering Hamas a choice. For every 10 additional hostages it releases, we will give another one-day pause in the fighting. But after that is done, we will continue with all force to continue to put pressure on Hamas to release all of our 240 hostages. There will be no one left behind. And we will continue. This war will end with the end of Hamas, because otherwise we're going to find ourselves in the same cycle of violence with Hamas, which tells us it wants to perpetrate another October 7th massacre. And we won't let it.
That's Israeli government spokesperson Ilon Levy. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam. The United States says leaders of Rwanda and the DR Congo have agreed on steps to de-escalate after alarm over a surge in violence. U.S. Director of National Intelligence Avery Haines traveled to the two countries on Sunday and Monday and said the United States would monitor their efforts. Kinshasa accuses the M23 rebels, who are primarily Tutsis, of enjoying support from Rwanda, a claim publicly backed by the United States. Father Jean-Claude Atusamiso is the CEO and president of Congo Minerals USA. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpunga that he doubts whether the two leaders agree on how to end the conflict.
The problem for me is the U.S. know what's going on in the Congo. They know that Rwanda invaded Congo, and they know that they have their soldiers in the Rwanda side, and they have their business people in the Rwanda side. They know how they benefit from what Rwanda is doing. Congolese are not children. Congolese know what's going on. We want them to take those soldiers out of Congo. That's it. And the president, Felix, is clear on that. All of us, we know. We have been seeing how things are going.
Do you think there's a chance that the two countries, the two leaders, President Tshisekedi and President Kagame, can sit down and solve that problem?
It will never happen.
So what do you think should be the solution then?
The President Kagame must take all those Rwandese he's sending every day in Congo to bring them back in Rwanda. According to the U.S. and according to the President Kagame, it's the Congolese who are in the rebellion who are fighting. Why, when they are dying, they are going to bury them in Rwanda? If they were Congolese, why they are bringing them back to Rwanda when they die?
So as DR Congo heads for elections next month, and there's still tensions in the eastern part of the country, what does that mean for the election?
So the Congolese soldiers are fighting, and they're taking a lot of areas in the eastern Congo. They are fighting and they are taking a lot of proportion of in the eastern Congo. And we believe that on the day of election, all the Congo going to be taken back by the Congolese soldiers on the day of election. We believe that.
They have agreed now to let the UN peacekeepers leave. What's your comment on that?
No, but those UN peacekeepers have been stealing, mugging natural resources, coltan, gold, all those natural resources. Enough is enough. The Congolese has their own army now. Let the Congolese fight for themselves. Because these people went there for another game and for another reason, not to protect the Congolese people.
Father Jean-Claude Atusamiso is the CEO and president of Congo Minerals USA. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpunga from the state of Virginia, USA. The chair of Liberia's Elections Commission says she's pleased with the way that the commission conducted the first round of the presidential vote on October 10 and the runoff on November 14, despite some challenges. This after the commission on Monday officially declared former Vice President Joseph Boakai the winner of the November 4 runoff election. Chairlady Davietta Brown Lansana tells me that she is planning ways to strengthen the commission to better carry out its mandate of conducting free, fair, and credible elections, including securing early funding.
I think the process was good, despite funding delays, despite the fact that we have challenges on a few with respect to the rough terrain, despite pockets of agitation here and there and all this hate speech and, you know, criticisms of whether we were going to deliver or not. But, you know, at the end of the day, we say that, as we have said before, that the votes that Liberians put in the ballot box are the votes that we will count, we will tally, we will collate, and then we announce to the Liberian people. And this is what the National Elections Commission has just done, you know, in the October 10 as well as the 14 November runoff presidential election.
Madam, looking back, what do you think worked and what didn't work?
What worked well, I would say, firstly, we have expert staff with capacity to run elections administration, including all of the technical things that we needed to do. You are aware that we transitioned from optical mark recognition, which is basically a manual process, to biometric voter registration using biometric technology, you know, on printed cards, which were distributed to the 2.4 plus million registrants. So this is a big plus for the commission. With respect to challenges, we say that perhaps maybe lesson learned would be that we will at this time continue to plan and advocate for early funding to the National Elections Commission. And we're looking at some legislation that will actually enforce having an escrow account for the commission so that we don't wait until 24 months to the elections, then we're running behind the funding, considering that at times there are economic challenges. Even the very government that is responsible to provide these fundings usually go through. So early planning can be of great help to ensuring that funding is available. There are other things, but, you know, there's just too many.
Is your term over now? If you are continuing to serve, what do you want to change next?
Okay, you know, the position is an appointed position, but by law, it's a tenure position. And I've gone 3 years already this year. So it's left 4 more years. And in tenure, it means that if the law is respected, it means that I can go another 4 years. If the politics overtakes the law, then, of course, it means that I chart a new course in another direction. But we continue to remain at the commission, and we're focusing now on how to strengthen the commission in its discharge of its mandate, that is to conduct free, fair, inclusive, and credible elections. We have several proposals that we think can help to strengthen the commission, something to the effect that we're looking at how we can address the overcrowdedness at polling places. We're also looking at strengthening the CVE strategies and, you know, the electoral reform processes.
David Etta Brown Lansana is the chair of National Elections Commission of Liberia. She was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 23rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo this week called on African countries to adopt what he calls Afro-democracy in place of Western liberal democracy. Obasanjo said Western-style democracy will never work in Africa because it does not consider the view of the majority. Bayo Onanuga is a special advisor on information and strategy to Nigerian President Bola Tinubu. He tells me that the former president's thoughts on democracy are coming a little too late, considering that Obasanjo himself played a role in bringing about Nigeria's current system of democracy.
His idea is coming very late in the day, because we are now into 24 unbroken years of a presidential system of government. And it's too late to tell us that we need to remodel it, that we need to reform it, or we need to adopt what he calls Afro-democracy. What we know is that before we adopted presidential democracy in 1979, we had parliamentary democracy. There were some little problems attached to it. The military came, they disrupted it. But when you look, compare the two, the parliamentary democracy was far much better than the presidential democracy that Obasanjo himself adopted in 1979 as the military ruler of Nigeria. So he cannot come again after he became president in 1999. He ruled for 8 years. There were chances for us to change the system, and he didn't do it. So he cannot now wake up 16 years after he left office and now begin to pontificate that we should adopt a new system of government. It doesn't make any sense to me. What he needed to have said is that, oh, we need to really adjust a bit the system we have. Many of us in Nigeria know that the presidential system is very, very expensive. You want to be president of Nigeria, for instance, you need to campaign in all parts of Nigeria. It's expensive. Under the whole system, the parliamentary system, all you needed to do was to win your constituency. So to me, I think he has lost his mind. He's just now waking up to reality. So it's too late in the day. He should keep the idea to himself.
I think his argument is that the current liberal democracy we have does not include the majority of people. In other words, I think he's suggesting an elimination of the current representation system or the parliamentary system. I think so. What do you think?
Look, let me leave Nigeria and go to a place like Liberia, where they just held an election. 1.6 million people there voted. That's about the voting population of Liberia. And they elected one of the two major candidates as the new president with a slight majority. If people didn't come out, then something is wrong somewhere. So I don't know what he means by this election does not include majority of people. People are interested in this election. They want to take part and express their free will, express their political preference, and so on.
Before I let you go, I think he's suggesting perhaps the fact that what he called the people who brought us the Western liberal democracy are themselves questioning its rightness or its invention. Maybe that's why he's calling for a rethink on the Western liberal democracy.
Well, I don't agree with all, again, that perspective. Even the Western democracies are not the owners of democracy. And when you compare democracy with military rule, where he was a military ruler and so on, to whatever system you have, I will always say, let us have democracy. What we simply define, government of the people for the people. So I don't understand what he's talking about.
Bayo Onanuga is the special advisor on information and strategy to Nigerian President Bola Tinubu. He was speaking with us from Abuja. The Nigerian presidency is welcoming new agreements with Germany, including a deal that calls for the West African nation to export liquid natural gas to Germany each year. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu is desperately seeking to make the country attractive to investors in a bid to revive an economy bedeviled by slow growth, rising inflation, and huge debt. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The signing Tuesday of the two memoranda of understanding between Nigerian companies and their German counterparts was the latest in a flurry of investment deals clinched by the Tinubu-led administration in recent months. The signings come less than 2 weeks after Nigeria and Saudi Arabia signed a deal to revive the country's non-functional refineries. The presidency, in a statement, welcomed the new deals and assured Germany of investment security. Under one deal, Riverside LNG of Nigeria will supply some 850,000 tons of liquefied natural gas to Germany each year, working with German firm Johannes Schutz Energy Import AG. The first delivery of gas is expected in 2026, and the presidency said gas exports may increase in future years. Authorities say the deal will make use of natural gas that otherwise would have been flared into the atmosphere. Nigeria has Africa's largest gas reserves, over 5 trillion cubic meters, but due to poor infrastructure for processing gas, the country burns off much of it every day. Nigeria also secured a $500 million renewable energy deal with another German company. The deal calls for Germany's DWS Group to supply funding for renewable energy projects in Nigeria, especially in rural areas. The president's spokesperson, Ajuri Ngelale, did not take calls for comment. but he spoke to Lagos-based Channels Television about the president's drive for foreign investments.
He is personally conducting an open-door policy to investors from around the world, including here in Germany, to ensure that they have direct access to all of the regulators and government officials that will further enhance the environment in which foreign direct investment would be coming into the country.
This week, President Tinubu attended the G20 Compact with Africa Summit that experts say is an avenue for African countries to expand their economies through investments and business. Emeka Okengwu is an economic analyst. He says the investments are important.
There's no way $500 million can be wished away. It's a big deal and it should be celebrated. Of course, it's going to be creating jobs at the base of our productivity demand. It's energy. So if we have energy, you know, more industry will work. People can produce more. People can get jobs. However, it is one thing to sign paper. It's another thing for you to get the deal off the ground.
Nigerian officials are also seeking investments in Nigeria's electricity and rail transport sectors. The Nigerian president appealed to investors to, quote, forget the past and focus on building a relationship that removes obstacles and fosters progress and prosperity. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Kenya's health ministry has rolled out a digital health information system to help workers diagnose patients and store their health records. Mohammed Yusuf reports from a village in western Kenya where hospitals have recorded an increase in people seeking medical assistance since the deployment of the system.
Mildred Owegi is one of 3,000 community health promoters in Kisumu County in western Kenya. Owegi, who has been doing this work for 30 years, recently started using a digital health information system on the job. A phone app allows her to diagnose diseases before administering medication and to know when to advise people to visit a health facility.
Because normally we are using these handouts, and the phone is good because the phone is directing you on what to do. So you can do what the phone is telling you, so you can do the right thing.
Lillian Okelo, a mother of twins, is embracing the new system.
I like the digital way of taking the health data of the children, because when they always come, I always see them just reading what is in their phone and doing exactly what they're supposed to do compared to the manual one.
Kenya launched the digital health information system last month, providing smartphones to 100,000 health workers nationwide with the goal of improving the quality of health care. Health experts say the system could push Kenya closer to universal health coverage, ensuring people can access health care services anytime and anywhere. In the past few weeks, in this hospital in Kisumu County, the number of patients seeking medical services has increased from 700 to 1,800. Richard Adede is a clinical officer at Nyangande Hospital.
The number of patients has increased a lot, a lot. More so, again, the guys who have achieved a lot in terms of the digitalization of HIV clans and TB clans, because we can detect them early, we call them a day before, and they come.
The local government says the deployment of electronic system allows it to plan for the healthcare needs of the people. John Seda is a Kisumu County Community Health Service Coordinator.
So we don't have to look for data because it is within a touch, and we can use it to make a project what we might have. For example, we can say that next year we're expecting this number of the deliveries. This year we expect to consume this amount of commodities. This year, these are our baseline morbidity levels. So we expect next year we need to prepare for a similar or something higher or lesser.
The project still faces hurdles such as the lack of reliable data networks in some areas. For now, health workers are advised to seek places with good connectivity when helping people in need. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Kolal, Kenya.
And that's it for this Thursday, November 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botting, Washington, saying, have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.